behalf of Lineberg Information Services, this is Bob Keebler, bringing you tax planning opportunities in a volatile economic environment. Today we'll talk about strategies that might immediately help your clients with respect to their stock bond type investments. So let's begin with loss harvesting. This is something we've talked about before, but there's no better time than right now to carefully take and realize losses. Now, that doesn't mean you're going to get out of the market if you believe the market's going to turn around. What that means is you're going to realize losses, especially short-term losses, lock those in, and be able to use those to offset current gains you've already incurred or gains that you'll incur in the next 6 months. So we'll talk a little bit about loss harvesting. The other thing that I'm seeing a lot of is clients calling, wondering how to hedge portfolios, how to create their own collars, how to do variable forward sales, and we'll touch base on briefly on some of those strategies. The other two or three areas that we should talk about are Roth recharacterizations for 2010 and for 2011. There's a lot of clients that made conversions. They made conversions when the market was higher. They're coming back to me and saying, Bob, should I recharacterize? We'll talk about both those instances. And grantor retained annuity trust should be red hot right now, especially the short-term grants. What's going on is when we do short-term grants, we're able to grab the extreme volatility of the market. So I think that's very, very important. Other strategies you may want to talk about and embrace. A lot of our clients right now have bonds that are trading at a premium. I'll briefly walk through why those bonds should be liquidated, even if they're replaced with similar bonds, because when you liquidate the bond trading at a premium today, you're going to pick up capital gain. You'll probably be able to offset that with losses from other places in your portfolio. But more importantly, when you repurchase that bond, you're going to be able to amortize that premium over the life of the bond, and that's going to save you considerable income tax. A lot of clients right now are moving into gold investments. What we really need to know is the physical ownership of gold, when it is sold, is going to be taxed at 28%. If you own gold mining companies and you sell those, you're going to be taxed just like any other stock market investment. If you own gold futures or index-type accounts, what's going to happen is you're taxed on a 60-40 basis, 60% long-term capital gain, 40% short-term capital gain, comes out to about usually a 27% federal tax rate. So those are all things that we want to put in the back of our minds. Now, on loss harvesting, what we really need to embrace is the idea of taking those losses off the table. Now, sometimes that takes great courage, but you do not always have to be out of the market, okay? Now, one thing you want to start with is read Section 1091 of the code. That's the wash sale rule. Basically says I cannot sell a lost stock today and buy it back tomorrow. I have to be out of the market for that particular stock for a period of 30 days. One thing that's important when you're recognizing losses like this, you always want to make sure that you're not realizing short-term losses that are going to offset long-term gains, because that becomes very, very inefficient. Basically, you might, in some instances, be better to pay the tax at 15% on a long-term basis, get that behind you, and save those short-term losses, realize those if they're still going to be short-term in 2012, so that you can use those to offset future short-term losses. And if you go on my website, I'll post a chart which talks about that. Now, one thing we often do, if somebody owns stock of, say, Procter & Gamble, and they want to sell that at a loss, we would have their financial advisor find a company with an extremely high correlation coefficient to Procter & Gamble. So something that has a 99% correlation, we would then buy that, sell the Procter & Gamble, and maybe wait 31 days and then jump back into the Procter & Gamble. Now, you could also engage in a strategy which is called doubling up. In the doubling up strategy, what I typically would do is if I have 1,000 shares of Procter & Gamble and I want to sell it at a loss, I would go out, I would buy another 1,000 shares of Procter & Gamble, I would wait 31 days, and then I would sell, by using the specific identification method, my original Procter & Gamble stock that was at a loss. Now, I can also possibly double up on my lost stock and enter into a cashless collar. There are very sophisticated planning techniques out there where I double up, I collar my new stock where I will not have to worry about the gain or loss on that, and then I wait 31 days and I sell the existing stock. Now, what we should also talk about is basically what should we be doing with concentrated positions. Recognize that in a volatile market like this, people are scared. For example, I'm representing this one gentleman. He works for a multinational, and he's out of the country right now on assignment, but he basically has two stocks in his portfolio, stock of his employer and a stock of another company called Chipotle, a Mexican restaurant. And what he's worried about is that together with all his stock options and the portfolio of his employer's securities, that makes up about 85% of his net worth. Very concerned with hedging that and protecting it. So some of what we have is we're looking for the best ways to protect those gains and losses. Oftentimes, what people will do in those situations, they'll buy put options. A put option is nothing more than an insurance policy on a stock going down in value. When you buy a put option, many times people will do what's called a poor man's collar, and they'll write a call option to finance the put option. The other thing you can do, and this is going to take some research on your part, but in understanding the transaction, but you can still go short against the box. You are still allowed to go short against the box. That does not trigger the constructive sale rules, provided you close that transaction, you close your short sale by the end of January of 2012, okay? So you want to read the rules, but that's something you can consider. So if right now you're very worried because 95% of your net worth is in Bank of America, for example, you could possibly short the stock. And for a while, I don't think you could short bank stocks, but you might be able to now. You could short that, and then you'd be economically hedged, but you'd have to take that short off by the end of January in 2012. Other areas where people will hedge is they will do the typical charitable remainder trust. Again, I have a client this week because of a concentrated position. We're running the math on a charitable remainder trust for them. The other technique out there, of course, is the variable forward sale. Behaves rather similar to a collar, except you're agreeing to deliver a specified amount of stock in the future. So those are things we can think about for clients with concentrated positions. Now let's talk about Roth recharacterizations. What the law says is a taxpayer may recharacterize, undo a Roth conversion in the current year or by the filing deadline of the current year's tax return. Let me walk you through this. If a person converted to the Roth on January 1st, 2010, they have until October 15th, 2011, another 2 months, or close to 2 months, to recharacterize. Now, why would a person recharacterize? Primarily because the stock has gone down in value. So let's say I converted $100,000 and it's now worth $80,000. In all likelihood, what I would do is I would recharacterize. I would then, under the law, I have to wait 30 days because I converted in 2010. There's a special rule. I can wait 30 days, and 30 days from now, I can basically do another conversion, okay? Read the regulations on this under 408A of the code. That's basically the rule. Now, if you converted in 2011, you can recharacterize this year yet, but you have to wait until January 1st, 2012 to get back into the Roth IRA. We still have a lot of clients right now. They're evaluating whether they should recharacterize. For clients that have not converted yet, right now they're using this opportunity to convert. Okay, they're using this opportunity to convert. And when they convert, they will often convert by asset class, large cap, small cap, mid cap. And basically by converting by asset class, what you're doing is you're creating many opportunities for success. And you stick with your current asset allocation, but if you, say, have six different mutual funds, you would do six conversions. And if they were each, say, $100,000, you would hope that one went up to 120, 130, 140 by October of 2012. Now, the other strategy out there with the Roth, and this is a strategy we've been embracing for some clients, not everyone, is to wait until January 1st, 2012 to convert. And then you're going to be able to recharacterize up until October 15th, 2013. That gives you 21 and a half months. But so you're able to evaluate the stock market during that 21 and a half months. you're also able to evaluate what happens from a tax policy standpoint. If rates are going up, you'd want to embrace the Roth conversion. If rates are going down, you might say, wait a minute, this doesn't make sense. Why would I pay tax at 33% when the rate going forward is going to be much lower? So those are all things that you need to look at, possibly embrace, and just see how they're going to work in your particular circumstance. So the Roth conversion continues, in my mind, to be one of the more viable alternatives in today's economic environment. So what we're looking at is the critical decision factors that go into this. Obviously, the volatility and the success of the Roth IRA during the period where you're right after you convert until October 15th of the next year. You have to keep an eye on tax rates. If tax rates are going up, the Roth is a great idea. Individuals with outside funds to pay the tax liability can benefit greatly from the Roth IRA. And then, of course, time horizon. How long does a person have to make all this work? You're always going to be looking at post-conversion returns. That becomes the most important thing to look at, because if I get a nice post-conversion return, I'm more likely to stay in the Roth IRA. If I have a post-conversion decrease in value, I'm more likely to want to jump out of the Roth IRA. Finally, on the grant-to-retain annuity side, trust side, this is not an income tax strategy, but an estate tax strategy. The goal here, if somebody came in with a portfolio and they said, Bob, I own $5 million for the Procter & Gamble stock. I really don't have any desire to sell it, but I know I have an estate tax problem. My total net worth is $25 million. What can I do with the P&G stock? And I could say you could gift it all away using your $5 million coupon, and they might say, well, that doesn't make sense. I'm worried about it going down in value. I might say, well, let's do a 2 or 3 year grad. Let's do a short-term grad and try to push any upside we have. And actually, if you look at a company like Procter & Gamble right now, the 75-20 rate for September is going to be down to 2%. The dividends on companies like McDonald's, Procter & Gamble are all over 2%. There is a built-in success factor when you structure some of these transactions. So you should take a hard look at that for your clients that have nice dividend-paying portfolios. So what we really want to do is talk about how do we create success from an income tax standpoint, how do we create success from an estate tax standpoint. A couple other things we're seeing is if you have clients, once we know where income tax rates are going, if they're going up next year, which seems very unlikely, you would want to sell bonds with accrued interest at the end of December, bring that income into the 2011 return rather than let it extend out into 2012. When you have bonds that are trading at a premium, what we've been suggesting to clients is they sell those bonds, they incur a capital gain if it's a long-term capital gain. Maybe they can offset that capital gain with losses, or at minimum, worst cases, they pay maybe 15% federal capital gains tax on that. But then they're allowed to amortize that premium. When they buy the same bond back, there's no wash gain rule, they are allowed to amortize that premium. And when they amortize that premium, what happens is that becomes a contra income item, an expense, and it's going to reduce their taxable interest income. So those are very powerful things. Last point. You will have clients that want to invest in gold, that have invested in gold. You want to take a look at, from a tax perspective, the best way to invest in gold. And if you hold gold, physical possession, or it's held by a custodian for you, that is going to be taxed when you sell at a 28% capital gains rate. That's 8 points above the regular capital gains rate. So many people will seek to buy gold mining companies if they believe they're priced fairly, because then they're going to get a 15% capital gain, not a 28% capital gain. Short-term gains on gold are going to be taxed as ordinary income, and that would be taxed at your normal rate. And when you look at gold futures, 1256 contracts, those are going to be taxed on a 60-40 basis, 60% long-term, 40% short-term. The other thing about gold investments is the wash sale rules do not apply to losses on collectibles. So you could sell on Monday and buy back on Tuesday if you have a built-in loss on gold or silver. So there's a lot we covered in a relatively short period of time. I want to thank you for joining us today, and Lineberg Information Services will continue to work hard to bring you the latest cutting-edge strategies in the world of tax and finance.